How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day. Hey there, and welcome to the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. I am John Corrales, one half of the Rain and Jays, here by myself tonight answering your Twitter questions in our mailbag using the hashtag Rain and Jays. Jay King could not be with us tonight. He's out there dropping threes like Marcus Smart on some men's league, which is to say exactly what I mean. He's probably dropping too many threes and not hitting a lot of them. But hey, keep shooting, Jay. And Jan Packard is out there studying like a madman, trying to be a productive member of society as opposed to a 43-year-old podcaster. So good for you, Jam. It's good for you to have goals. We asked you to submit your Twitter questions using the hashtag RainandJays. So I'm going to answer your Twitter questions that you sent in using the hashtag RainandJays. So let's get right to it. Scott at Boston Sports. Does Isaiah need to chill after every loss? Now he's pissed about playing time, basically said again without saying. No, the answer is no. He does not need to chill after every loss. I love that he's competitive. I love that he has that fire. And I love that he takes losses personally. And that's not to say that it's a problem. I think he can be pissed off after a frustrating loss. I mean, hell, we watched that game. I was sitting there in my chair, eating chips and salsa, watching that game, getting pissed off. He was participating in that game. How pissed off do you think he was in the middle of that? And yeah, of course he wants to play more. He played 33 minutes in that game. Of course he wants to play more. I bet if he played five more minutes, he might have been able to influence the outcome of that game. But, and here's the thing, that's his job. His job is to want to play 42 minutes a game. That is what a player should want to do, especially a player as good as Isaiah Thomas. And when he doesn't, and when they lose, he should be pissed off about that, at least to some degree. It's Brad Stevens' job to make sure that Isaiah plays the appropriate amount of minutes. And now Isaiah Thomas is not like other NBA stars. He has grown from the last pick in the draft to this amazing player who is doing great things for the Celtics, who has blown everybody away and is, by all accounts, a star player in the NBA. No, he's not LeBron-level superstar player, but he is an all-star-level player. He made the all-star team and deserved to, and he deserves to make it again this year. He is absolutely on an all-star pace. However, there is irrefutable evidence that playing him too many minutes is detrimental to his health. And sure, he could have played 38 minutes against the Pistons, and he can go out and play 38 against Sacramento and play 38 against the Sixers. But are those three or four wins worth the risk of losing him for 3, 4, 5 weeks down the stretch in February, March, April? Is that worth it? Because Isaiah Thomas, and I say this all the time, and I'm a big believer in your biggest strength is your biggest weakness. And you have to manage that. You have to be aware. And that applies to all walks of life, whatever you think your biggest strength is, that is probably your biggest weakness. And Isaiah Thomas's biggest strength is his fire, that edge, that chip on his shoulder, that being pissed off at every little slight out there. That's his edge. That drives him to go and jump in the lane and fling himself into the Andre Drummonds of the world and the DeAndre Jordans of the world and try to finish at the rim. That's his strength. But it becomes his biggest weakness because that style of play, that aggressive style of play at his size, makes him hit the floor a lot. And for three straight seasons, we have seen him hit the floor, land awkwardly on his tailbone, and to varying degrees of, holy crap, is he okay? He has hurt himself. A few years ago, he missed a lot of time. Last year, it looked scary, but he didn't really miss much time. And this year, he had that scare, and he said, I was afraid that this was going to be bad, and it wasn't. But he falls on his wrist. That wrist ends up being a problem almost every season. That finger is jacked up. Some of this stuff is inevitable no matter who you are, but Isaiah Thomas's style of play makes him susceptible to some of these things, and he hits the deck a lot. How many times can you hit the floor before something bad happens? And it's Brad Stevens' job to make sure that Isaiah plays enough minutes to impact the game positively while not being a long-term risk to his health. So Isaiah does not need to chill after every loss because that fire is what drives him and is what makes him great. But Brad Stevens is going to manage his minutes as best as he can and try to preserve him because we all know without Isaiah, we're screwed. And we can talk about how the injuries have impacted the Celtics, but without Isaiah, we're really having some problems. So I think his fire is fine. He and Brad Stevens have a great relationship. He and his teammates have a great relationship. And they all know that anytime he gets pissed off about things like playing time, it's because he wants to win. And he's not upset about any particular player playing ahead of him. He just wants to win. And if he doesn't think he gets the opportunity to help the team win, then he's going to be upset. I love that about him, but it doesn't mean he's always right. So at L. Hines 1, you focused on all of the offensive issues with Smart and Olynyk, but the Celtics gave up 121 points. What about the defense? The Celtics defense has been an issue. Smart and Olynyk are, I think, play defense very well. I mean, Marcus Smart and Olynyk plays in the, we got to come up with like a name for the Sam Packard positional defense. That's, we always joke about it with Sam, but he does play pretty good positional defense. He's not going to be flashy like Smart and rip the ball out of people's hands as they're trying to drive like he did to Goran Dragic, but Olynyk is going to be in front of people. He's going to mostly keep people in the right spot, drive them to towards the help, and mostly be an okay defender, a good team defender. He's not going to be the best defender on the floor. He's not going to block a lot of shots. There might be long stretches where he doesn't block any shots. But he's going to do okay, and he's not going to kill you in the overall team defense. Marcus Smart, he's as tenacious as they come. The Celtics gave up 121 points to the Detroit Pistons, which is not good. That is not good. Some of that was Detroit just made shots. A bunch of those shots Detroit made were contested, especially towards the end of the game. Now, early on, they could have done some more things. Absolutely. And there were some breaks, tough breaks, where the ball bounced the wrong way and Detroit got chances to score easy baskets, and they did. That's stuff that's going to happen. I'm not just going to excuse it all away. The Celtics defense is not great, but as I've said before, Al Horford has missed a lot of time, and they are still trying to work well together. I'm not a big fan of how Amir Johnson has played overall, but he has done some decent things. I'm not going to say that he's had a bad season. I don't know if he's been quite as good as he was last year, but still not a huge issue. I think ultimately the Celtics defense is going to come together. We've only gone through a quarter of the season, so there's still 75% of the season left. So I'm not going to go too crazy about this defense. I think it will even out. There is some talk, though, about trading for a rebounder, which I addressed last night in the podcast, but it comes up again from Chris at Chris KJE. How about some talk about the at Danger Cart Bogut trade idea? Low risk and just what we need. I tried to search through Ryan Bernadoni, who's been a multiple time guest on the show, who's great. Absolutely follow at Danger Cart. He's really great perspective, and he thinks the game the right way, at least especially from putting a team together. But I couldn't find the trade idea. I'm assuming that there's a Bogut for Amir Johnson, kind of a low risk, kind of swapping problem, potential problem guys, whatever it is. And you know, I don't think that really solves much. To me, the answer is the question, what's the point? Really, what's the point? Do we solve enough issues? How many issues do we solve with Bogut? What do we get out of it? A few more wins? 3, 4, maybe 5 more wins? At this point, we're not trading for him until December 15th. There's a little window there where we can trade for him, get him in, and then we can retrade him by the deadline. So it's not a great situation, but you can trade for him and then have the potential to retrade him. You're not losing anything by trading away Amir Johnson in that situation. But is it really an overall positive thing? If at December 15th, in that week, you trade for Andrew Bogut, you bring him in, and he's a good player. He does a lot of good things. But you're starting over with your starting five. You're bringing another guy in. Now, he's good, and he might be able to catch on pretty quickly. But we're seeing chemistry issues with this team on the court. We're seeing how tough it is to work Al Horford in. The 3 or 4 games that you may benefit in the long run, where Bogut might help you in March, are you going to lose those 3 games in December or January trying to work him in and figure things out? Is it going to be worth it? Is it going to be worth the hit to the locker room? Where I just don't see, maybe that's not a problem, maybe that doesn't matter, but what's the point? What's the point of trading away Amir Johnson to bring back Andrew Bogut? Does that get us a championship this year? Does that bring us from the 3rd seed to the 2nd seed? Maybe. And even if it does, so what? Does that affect the overall season? I don't think so. It may solve a couple of problems. It may make us feel better in the short term. But I don't see what the overall impact does for the team. I don't think it's worth it. So I'm going to stick to my guns and say that unless the Celtics find a way to trade for a star player, a big-time star player, the type of guy that they're looking for in free agency, unless that player presents himself in a trade midseason, then I don't think the Celtics make a move. And the only exception to that would be some sort of Isaiah Thomas Godfather offer where you get rid of nothing for something really good that somebody else doesn't recognize is really good. That's the type of trade that Danny Ainge couldn't resist. But I just feel like, aside from that, there's just no point in making a trade, especially something like bringing Bogut in on a short-term thing to trade away a guy that like Amir Johnson. I don't see the overall net positive that it is for the Celtics. It might help a little, but not enough. At Aw Celtics fan, the whole IT plays no D thing shits me. Let's play. If he was 5'8", would he be a great defender? Let's start with Kawhi, Draymond, Whiteside, Drummond, DeAndre, Anthony Davis, LeBron. If those guys were 5'8", would they be a great defender? Look, I think what makes some of those guys great defenders, obviously Whiteside, Drummond, DeAndre, is the fact that they're huge and super athletic, especially DeAndre Jordan. He's just a massive, huge, huge guy that runs and jumps like a 6'7 guy. It's not fair. Anthony Davis is obviously a freak of nature. LeBron is a freak of nature. You shrink all those guys down to 5'8", they would have a lot of problems. Now, it's hard to really flesh this out. Isaiah's not a great defender, obviously. I'm not going to pretend that he's a great defender. But he's not a horrible defender. There are worse defenders out there. Kyrie Irving is a worse defender than Isaiah Thomas. Damian Lillard is a worse defender than Isaiah Thomas. And we may joke, but those, you would kill for those guys on the team, right? Most people would. Isaiah Thomas, last night, by the time you listen to it, against Detroit, he had, especially that one possession against Tobias Harris, he was all up in Tobias Harris's grill, set up shop inside his shorts, forced him into a bad shot. He does that from time to time. There are times where his height, it's going to be an issue. It's going to be an issue. Teams will continuously try to post him up, and they will be successful from time to time. That's just something that's going to happen. But Isaiah Thomas's defense is not something that we should be focusing on. Of all the things that we should be focusing on in this season, Isaiah Thomas's defense is not it. I don't want to say Isaiah Thomas is untouchable or infallible, but he is pretty awesome. And I would rather see, if we're going to criticize Isaiah Thomas, we can talk about his three-point shooting. And I think that might be a function of his hurt finger on his shooting hand. So even that's not something I'm comfortable with criticizing him for. He has been amazing. No one is beyond criticism. But to pick on Isaiah Thomas for his defense, I think he does as best he can with what he has. And to say he's a net positive is understating it. He makes this team go. So there's nothing that would make me even question how he's playing out there. And like a guy like Kawhi, if he was 5'8", yeah, he would not be Defensive Player of the Year. He would not. Draymond Green would not be Defensive Player of the Year. He just couldn't be. You can't do the things that they do at that size. They do what they do because they've got long arms, because they can defend multiple positions, because they can do things like block a shot, make a steal, grab a rebound. They can do all of that stuff. It's all a function of their size. That's what makes them great defenders. And Isaiah Thomas, at his size, just can't be a great defender, but he's not a terrible defender. He is as good a defender as he can be for the offensive player that he is and for the size that he is. So let's not talk about that very much. I don't think that's, you know, I agree with Justin at Aw Celtics fan. I agree with him. A lot of these guys, if they were Isaiah size, would be not great defenders. It's just the fact of the matter. Back to the rebounding thing. At Patrick's 1591, if the next offseason we don't acquire a rebounder, would Yabusele and Zizic be able to pick up the slack? Look, they're both playing well overseas. There's no doubt about that. Yabusele plays outside. Zizic would probably be more the guy that would fix some of the rebounding. So, yes, to some degree. We'll have to see what happens in the draft or who we might get in a, if there is a trade, but or free agency most likely. But yeah, they'll be able to help. Yabusele's a big wide body. Zizic is a big dude. They can certainly help. They will absolutely help. I will say that the rebounding is a tiny bit overrated. The Celtics could have won that game against Detroit in other ways that did not require them to rebound the ball any better that they did than they did. There are other things that you can do. And I really think that rebounding is being, what's the term I want to use here? Valued less as a important key to winning in the NBA. I think teams, of course, you want to get defensive rebounds. That is a very key part to getting a stop. Obviously, that's important. You do not want to get crushed on the offensive boards. That is a clear weak spot for the Celtics, and that should be addressed somehow. However, when you look at things that will win games in the NBA, your transition defense is very important. Your ability to score, your ability to score the right way, the threes and the layups, and to run that kind of offense effectively is a very big key and valued more. The versatility of a guy to be able to do multiple things, the ability to defend multiple positions is a more highly sought after skill than your ability to rebound. Yes, a rebounder would be great, but you can win in this league and get out rebounded. That's just the fact. Now, the Celtics are getting out rebounded to an incredible degree in some games, and that's a problem. I'm not going to completely say that that's not an issue. That's something that needs to be fixed. I'm just saying that, like I said in the last show, focusing on it too much could end up leading to other problems. So, yeah, I think Yabusele and Zizic could be enough to make that problem go away. Next, at Mohamed Helayel. I really screwed that up, man. I'm sorry. But couple of questions here from Mohamed. Will the Celtics make a trade more or none? If yes, who could be concrete approachable targets? Back to my prior point, I don't think they're going to make a trade. I just don't think they're going to make a trade. And so if there is a trade to be made, they're going after somebody big. And that somebody big, I don't think it's going to be DeMarcus Cousins. I believe Zach Lowe is telling the truth when he says Brad Stevens does not want to coach him or may not want to coach him. I really do believe that. So unless something changes, I don't think they're going to go after like a Gordon Hayward. I don't think they're going to make many moves. And what's going to suck about that is the Celtics are the one team in this league that have a ton of assets that could make a move. They've got the picks. They've got Brooklyn's pick, and Brooklyn is not great. And they've got next year's Brooklyn's pick, and they've got future picks, and they've got young players, and they've got guys like Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder who could be available for superstar-level players. They've got guys that can be moved. They've got assets that can be moved. They just probably won't do it. And so they're going to be rumored a lot, and the trade deadline's going to pass, and we're going to be just like we were on draft night, pissed off that the Celtics didn't do anything. I think that's how it's going to go. The other question from Mohamed, Jay Crowder, I'm intrigued by his potential. Can he make the leap to an all-star level? I think his ceiling is a guy who would get considered as an injury replacement if the right guy gets hurt, which means he's going to be a really good player. He's just not, I don't think he's going to be that all-star level player. He might make a team. I would not be shocked at all if Jay Crowder makes an all-star game or two over the course of his career. That would not be entirely shocking. But I don't think he is going to make one. But he could. Like, I think his, if he can really get that three-point shot down and score a little bit more, then he becomes a much more realistic all-star type of player. But he's not going to be like the guy that gets voted in. He's never getting voted in. But I think that he's going to be on a list. If you have that after the All-Star team is selected, and you have all of the analysts get together and they say, who was on the outside that you might want on this team? Somebody might bring up Crowder and say, I would just love to see him out there, because you know he's going to take that game a little seriously, and he's going to be the guy, the one guy out there who's going to play defense. And I would love to see Jay Crowder out there as an all-star playing defense. That would be amazing. How many guys would he piss off, bodying them up, getting steals, and going in for dunks? That would be great. So we'll see. But I don't think that's going to be an issue. Okay. At @green_stats18, thoughts on a certain starting point guard not starting if something needs to change. I don't think that that's going to be a thing. I think Isaiah Thomas, I know he used to be coming off the bench, but I just think he's solidified himself as a starter, and you want to get him out there in these situations against the other team's best team, and you want to play him. So I will say that the Celtics have played better without him on the floor than they did last year without him on the floor. So they've played better. They figured out how to score a little bit without him on the floor. But let's not go too crazy in that. I think he should be a starter. And I just don't think things need to change. I think we just need to keep going with what we're going with and just let Horford and everyone else figure this out. And the loss against Detroit will turn into a win against somebody we shouldn't have beaten down the stretch. You know, that just all evens out. I'm not worried about that. Okay, let's get into some fun things here. At Sam Sheehan, this is great. I don't know what I'm going to come up with here, but let's give it a shot. Jarebko's true shooting percentage is 46.4% on 55 attempts in the 229 minutes without Kelly Olynyk. It's 111.8 on 17 attempts in the 82 minutes with Kelly Olynyk. My question is, since we obviously can't separate the two, what should the nickname of the two-man platoon be? The best I could do was the three Ericksons. Oh, man. That is not... I don't know. I really did give this thought. And I can't figure out what you would call a Kelly and Jonas, other than like the Jonas Brothers, which I hear you groaning. I hear you. I'm sorry. That's not my answer. I'm just spitballing. And without Jam, I got nothing to work off of. So I'm here by myself. So I apologize for that. I'm sorry. But I don't know. You know, it's got to be like Jarebko in the Bun, or I don't know. These are terrible. I'm horrible at this. I'm not even going to edit this out. It's just a horrible Oh, I'm going to get so much hate for this on Twitter. I got nothing. But if somebody else has a cool nickname, oh, I'm my own stomach is turning. Okay, I'm mad at myself. You don't have to be mad at me, guys. I'm mad at myself for this. So don't worry. I'm plenty mad at myself. Use the hashtag RandonJays. This is the Friday show we got all weekend. Just send the Jarebko Olynyk nickname, the tag team. What would their nickname be? I tried, but that's just, I'm sorry. I feel like I need to apologize for that for a long time. At Rafe-C, no, seriously, I'm sorry though. Could the Celtics use shock therapy on Smart for his shot selection? Stevens could zap him when he squares up for a ridiculous three. That would be amazing. I think what would happen though is Smart would just flop and then hit the deck as thinking that he got hit, and that would be counterproductive. But yeah, I'm all for anything that would get him to stop some of his shot selection. We talked about that before, but I am all in on that, completely all in on finding a way to get heat check Marcus Smart to chill the hell out. Okay, just chill out. People have tweeted this. I really feel like if his shot selection was better, if he just eliminated the heat checks, just take those stupid heat check shots out of the mix, that his percentage would actually be pretty good. And that dynamic would be so much different with him in the offense, because those heat checks would end up being swinging the ball around, and who knows. And hell, maybe it even comes back to Marcus for a better look at three. Marcus Smart, when he's in rhythm with a clean look, is not horrible at shooting threes. He's not. His percentage looks crappy because he takes two or three terrible threes per game, which he misses. And if you shoot eight and you are 0-for-3 on the others, 2-of-5, that's okay. 2-of-8 is terrible. So I'm okay with Marcus taking 4 or 5 threes. Even 5 feels like a lot, but in today's NBA with today's Celtics, they're out there shooting 40 damn threes per game. Marcus can have 4 or 5 of them in rhythm. He'll hit 2. Sometimes he'll hit 3. That's not a bad thing. That's okay. But yeah, if there was some sort of buzzer where, you know what? I'll take it a step further. You know, it's not even when he squares up for three. You could predict when he is going to heat check, when he's going, before he even takes the shot, and you could buzz him. And almost, like, if I would rather Marcus Smart, instead of taking that shot, came to the three-point line and fired the ball into the mezzanine and ran back on defense. To me, that's more effective than taking that stupid heat check shot and then the long rebound and whatever potential transition basket. If 3 times a game, Marcus Smart came down the floor and just punted the ball up into the top row, I would be okay with that. I'd be happy with that. If he just drop kicked that sucker and tried to put it up into the rafters, up onto the catwalk, 3 times per game, instead of taking the 3 shots that he takes, do it. I would rather see that. Okay. Why no playing time for Gerald Green? Because he's not good. He's just not that good. That comes from at Harry Jr. 1985. He's just not that good anymore. He had a stretch where he was good. He's not that good anymore. It's very simple. At the little guy 4, what's up with our pace this year? We're right at the league average. All depends on forcing turnovers, but how come we aren't? I think that'll come. We saw some of it last night against the Pistons. Some of it will come. And there's one more. At JBales96, what gift would you get Brad Stevens for Christmas? Don't say rebounding, he says. What gift would you get Brad Stevens for Christmas? How about a nice motorized tie rack for the one tie? I'd like to picture him with that tie rack going around in circles. with one tie on it. I'd like to see that. Because he really has like one tie and he wears it every three games. I don't know. There are people out there. I know Erin on Twitter is going to be on. She's always on tie patrol. She's going to call me out on that. He's got like 10 ties. But yeah, I'm going to go with that. Probably another lame answer, but best I can do under the circumstances. Okay. Great questions. Thank you all. I've been talking for 34 minutes, but I'm going to talk a little bit more. I'm going to finish on this thought, and we're going to talk a little bit here about why I love the game of basketball. And I'm going somewhere with this, and bear with me. I hope you stay with me till the end on this. And I hope if you have a little boy or a little girl, I hope they're listening too, especially a little boy. I think if you have a little son, I want to talk to him, especially right now. Why do I love the game of basketball? So many reasons. First of all, it's given me about almost everything in my life. It's given me, it's turned me into the man that I am. It took me from a little boy going into college into a man at the end with, you know, the mental toughness and all of that stuff. It's been really one of the most amazing experiences of my life, playing on a team, playing for a tough coach, and just shaping me as a human being. So I will always thank basketball for that. It's given me a lot of opportunity. I was able to travel the world. I played in Greece. I played all over this country. And I've seen so many cities specifically because I was able to play basketball. And I'm thankful for the opportunity it's giving me in that regard. It's given me this blog. It's given me this podcast. It's given me this connection to all of you. I've made some great friends. Jay and I. And we've started out like if it wasn't for basketball, we wouldn't have been blogging. We wouldn't have connected. Jay's such a good guy, and I'm happy to have him as a friend. You know, Chuck, who runs Red's Army with me, a great guy. I'm happy to have him as a friend. And you're just bonding through basketball. My teammates, and this is another thing that I love. The teammates that I had came from all over the country. A Colombian kid from LA, an Asian kid from San Francisco, a black kid from Cambridge, Cape Verdean kid from Eastie, a white kid from North Carolina, all these different backgrounds coming together, playing on the same team, the same common goal, going places and becoming friends, becoming brothers, becoming family. That stuff I love about basketball. These are friends of mine for life. These are people that I love like family. And the game itself is just so beautiful. Just watching these guys do things, and regardless of what you think about certain players, a LeBron or a Kevin Durant or whatever, when you watch them, Steph Curry, Anthony Davis, Karl Anthony Towns, Joel Embiid, time and time again, all of these players, you can keep naming names, the things that they do, just our guys, Isaiah Thomas, how does he do some of the things that he does? It's like a ballet out there. It's so strategic when you can get your mind around the game and some of the concepts and the things that these guys are running, what the coaches are doing, what Brad Stevens is drawing up. That stuff is amazing. It's beautiful. And we, in this age of social media, get to bask in its glory together. And here's my point. We exist in a time on social media where we should be able to share as one big family, as the basketball family that I have grown to love from Emerson College on to beyond that, the guys that I've played with, we should be able to enjoy it as the same family. We are bound by our love for basketball. We are bound by our love for the Celtics, and we should follow Red Auerbach's lead. We named our site after Red for a reason. Red helped break the color barrier because he saw beyond things that were superficial. And he didn't care what color somebody was. Sports is the ultimate meritocracy. If you are good, you're in. If you are good, you're in. I want you on my team. And I don't care what color you are. I don't care what religion you are. I don't care what sexual orientation you are. I don't care what gender you are. If you could play on my team and help my team win, let's do it. Let's roll. And that applies to us watching basketball. I had an experience, for those of you who don't know, on social media, on Twitter this past week, where a woman on Twitter shared an account that was made to spoof her account. They took her profile picture. They took her, they created a fake page. They copied her name. They just made this account. And it was done specifically to harass her because they did not agree with what she was saying about basketball. So they made this fake account and just said horrible, horrible things and tried to embarrass her and degrade her and harass her because they did not agree with what she was saying. She tweeted that out saying, please report these people. I retweeted it saying, here's a reminder that women have a vastly different experience watching basketball than we do. We men do. And what I got for that was an invasion of my DMs by a couple dozen people, mostly high school students, I believe, that really attacked me and accused me, questioned my motivation, eventually just calling me names, using homophobic slurs, and then using my profile picture to, within the DM conversation, use racial slurs and then take that conversation, screenshot that conversation, and tweet it out as if trying to say that I was the one using those slurs and trying to libel me, trying to, obviously harassing me, trying to ruin my reputation, all because I said that women have a vastly different experience. Now, that was my life for a few hours, and that was my life for a little bit of the next day. The women who are watching on social media get that constantly, constantly. And I want us all to be better. We are one big family, bound by our love for basketball, bound by our love for the Boston Celtics. And just because a person has a vagina rather than a penis does not make that person's opinions on the game of basketball any less valid than yours. That is it. Yet that's like saying someone who has blue eyes that person has a less valid opinion than yours, or someone who has blonde hair has a less valid opinion on basketball than yours. That is ridiculous to say, and it's just as ridiculous to say a woman has a less valid opinion on basketball than yours. Even if that's a woman who has less overall knowledge than you, well, you know what? There are guys out there with less overall knowledge than you. There are just people who are at various stages of learning and enjoying this game. And I personally, as a person who just loves and adores the game of basketball and is completely indebted for my entire life to this game of basketball, that round ball and that court and the two baskets 10 feet off the floor, I give everything to this game, and I welcome in with open arms anybody at any level, at any gender, any race, creed, color, ethnicity, all of it, all of it. If you love basketball, this is our sanctuary. This is our haven. We, as Celtics fans, as basketball fans, come together on game nights to enjoy something, our escape from reality. This is what we do. This is what we love. So just because there's a woman out there saying something about basketball, that does not invite you to make sexual comments about it. It doesn't invite you to make sexist comments about it. Come on, let's be better. Let's be better. This world is screwed up anyway. Regardless, whatever your politics are, you can admit this world is screwed up. So why not, in this sanctuary of basketball, Let's just love each other. And if somebody doesn't know something, man or woman, help that person out. If that person's asking a question or making a comment that might be less informed, just inform that person. This is important to me. And maybe I've said this stuff a few times on the show before, and man, I hope you're sticking with me through this. But this is important because the game of basketball is just a goddamn beautiful thing. And we should all enjoy it without fear of retribution for making a comment about the game. That's it. It's very simple to me. So thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for subscribing to the show. If you are a subscriber, I really, really do appreciate it. We do this out of love and our opportunity to reach out to you guys. So thank you if you're a subscriber. Thank you for rating us 5 stars. I hope that you do. Even if you disagree with stuff that I just said, I hope that we can at least have a conversation about it. That's really what I want. And if you want to talk to me about it and you disagree with what I said, just talk to me and we'll talk. I want to do that. I really want to have this conversation with people. So do that. You can find me on Twitter at @RedsArmy_John. And you can send us emails at LockedOnCeltics@gmail.com. Check out the rest of the Lockdown Podcast Network, please, and subscribe to whatever shows. We got football shows if you're a football fan. Enjoy the weekend, and hopefully we come back next week to talk about a couple of wins in a row over the Kings and the Sixers. If you're in Philly at the game on Saturday, come by, say hi, tweet me. I'm around. I'll be there. I'll be there with Sam Packard. He'll be there. So check us out, and hopefully I see you guys. And thanks again. This is the Locked On Celtics Podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Support for this podcast comes from Dice. With over 70,000 tech jobs and career resources like their salary predictor, Dice is the free way to hack your career in tech. Visit dice.com/canyouhackit for more info.